The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
How about them Eagles?
It's the weekend. Time to talk about your favorite sports for the Philly sports fan and beyond. Welcome to Philly Sports Jabronis with hosts Joe Dara and Mike Greger. We're here to share stories, jabs, and the like, and we're ready to go right now. Here are Mike and Joe.
Philly Sports Jabronis coming to you on this glorious football Friday. The really best kind of football Friday you can have in Philadelphia. Eagles Cowboys. It's our first Eagles Cowboys rivalry week as Jabronis, official Jabronis, and we're not taking this lightly. I'm Joe Dara, alongside as always Michael Greger, and we got a lot to talk about tonight. A lot to talk about, really, just regarding Eagles and Cowboys.
First place on the line. I predicted this a long time ago.
Yeah, dude, we both predicted 3-3. We both predicted the Cowboys would be 3-3 at this point, that we would be playing for first place in the what I like to call now right now the NFC least.
They can't even tank right. We can't even get a quarterback now. They're gonna win this division.
They really might if they win this game. And you know, I was kind of getting a little concerned today about what some of the local radio stations were talking about. I read somewhere or heard somewhere, but regardless, anyone who might be spewing this, whether it's written or spoken, it kind of has me a concern a little bit, because there's every reason to be really amped up for this game coming on Sunday. Regardless of the records, everyone in this division could somehow be winless, and you know, this game would still be important if you're playing for first place. And I think it was written somewhere that I heard on the radio, but someone was trying to downplay the fact that, oh, yeah, they're playing for first place this week, but win or lose, you know, what kind of whatever. It's not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things, and the loser's still going to be, you know, well within their rights to claim this division. I don't think so. I mean, I think that whoever loses this game is on basically the fast track to not making the playoffs.
It's October. I don't know about fast track. I think it depends how it plays out. If it's a blowout by one team, then I think the other team's dead in the water. If it's a close game and they're going to play each other again, I don't think they're completely out of it at all.
Right, they are going to play each other again, but isn't it like really late in the season?
Yeah, right. I think it is.
But the thing is, and it's weird. We were definitely, you and I, talking about this, I think 2 weeks ago, with the way that the Eagles' wins were working out for them so far, like they're winning the right game so far, even though they haven't really looked all that great, and even though they really especially haven't looked all that great considering how great they looked for a half.
Yeah.
But they're winning the right games. And
yeah,
I guess unfortunately, fortunately for the here and now, but maybe possibly unfortunately for down the road if the Eagles don't win this game, Dallas kind of in the same boat. And I'm pretty sure whoever wins on Sunday is not only going to be just in first place, but they're going to be 3-0 in the division, and they're going to be 4-0 in the NFC. So when you look at that, and you look at that math, and when you look at the fact that, at least in my opinion, I don't see a wild card coming out of this division.
No chance.
We gotta play this card. Hey, look, we only speak to the people once a week. You know, these people that speak to the people every day, they don't want to act like that this day today and this weekend is going to be the greatest thing to talk about for the rest of the football season. But damn, it is.
Well, no, if they win, no, clearly they're in the driver's seat. But I wouldn't say all is lost.
I'm not trying to say all is lost either, but let's put it this way. If whoever doesn't win this game, even though it's one game out of first place, I think that the way things have shaped up so far, you're going to very quickly become one of those teams that needs just a lot of help to happen. You know, even though it's only one game out with a loss. You know, because if you're the Eagles and you're one game out, and then you're no longer undefeated in the division, you're no longer undefeated in the NFC, but Dallas is, then you start needing them to lose, but to lose to the right teams. Because then, as you become, if you get that loss in the division, then you're closer to the bottom of the division, and it's you could kind of start getting murky. But whoever wins this game on Sunday, the way this division is, and I, you know, we both talked about how it's not anything really to write home about. But whoever gets that win on Sunday, with the way this division is really in a really good position. And by default, I think that that's just going to put the loser in a tough position. But, you know, granted, we're kind of talking about two teams that really, by all sense of the word, are mediocre.
Yeah. The Cowboys are confusing to me, because I wonder if they were not completely banged up on defense, how they might be a little better than what they're putting. Because that offense is pretty impressive. They can score points with anyone.
Oh, it is. And, you know, I think the loss of DeMarco Murray, you know, he's kind of...
They're completely one-dimensional.
Right. Unless this Randall is, you know...
No, he stinks.
Pure gold. Yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting a lot out of him. I didn't, you know, and today's topic of, you know, and the way sports conversations go, you know, today, you kind of have to bring up almost automatically the fantasy aspect of this. And I
thought about taking him, and then I was like, no, I'm not that desperate.
I'm not dropping Ryan Matthews for this guy. I'm not dropping a guy that gets hurt and saying his name just for this guy.
I started Andre Ellington against the Seahawks last night because I thought that was a better option than Randall.
That was a good choice. I mean, I don't know ultimately how many points he ended up with, but I saw he almost had that touchdown catch, right? That would have probably put him into.
He's a good player. I don't know why they don't use him more.
Well, they have been the last couple of weeks. They have been, and getting back to DeMarco Murray just real fast, I wouldn't put him necessarily in the NFL elite as far as running backs go, and that's a window that's getting, you know, real. It seemed like seemingly smaller by the day, but you know, even from a fantasy standpoint, like he's not anybody in any way, shape, or form that like jumps out at you per se. But it does seem like it's going to really, really make things that much more difficult for Dallas on Sunday, because he is a decent back and he is a good back when he stays healthy. And, you know, you could say any running back is going to have injury problems, but DeMarco Murray kind of falls on that side where he really, truly seems to have more injury problems than most. But he's a good enough back where they don't have anyone who can – at least to this point, quote unquote, replace him. So, you know, I think, you know, defenses aside, and you know that the defense has been a lot of topic of conversation, and you know, on Eagles defense and Dallas defense for good reason. But I think that is the biggest factor in this game. Even before you throw in, you know, Tony Romo and you know, and the ability for him to possibly shoot himself in the foot at the end of a game, you know, for someone to have, you know, with these defenses both being so bad, just being able to blanketly say, oh, well, whoever has the ball last is probably going to win this game. All that aside, I think that the DeMarco Murray situation is the most impactful situation for this game, and that plays the Eagles' favor. And they I hope that they're looking at this as a must-win, not just because they haven't won in Philadelphia, seemingly since Ray Rhodes was here, but just because this means a lot to the season. It really does. Like this is going to be about as early as a season defining game, I think, that you could possibly have in the National Football League.
I agree. No, I agree 100%. Now, I also wonder who's going to cover Jason Witten, considering what they did. That kid from Rutgers tore him up last week, and he's a nobody.
Yeah, that's a good point actually, because Witten, he hasn't been like his consistent self. Like he's, you know, as far as I can tell, or at least my opinion of him is that he's like just a consistent dude. Like he's always gonna get his, you know.
And yeah.
When they decide to go to him, he's going to get it. Like if he, and that really hasn't quite been the same this season. Like he's had some big games, but he hasn't been automatic every week. And you know, Mr. Bryant has really finally, I guess, blossomed. We've been waiting it. We've been waiting for this. Seemingly, it seems we've been waiting for this since before he was ever even in the NFL. But it finally seems like it happened, and the kind of the trickle down is kind of taken away from Witten a little bit. But yeah, on Sunday he might.
They have really good receivers. That rookie Williams is playing really well, and I want to say this too: the Eagles' corners have looked pretty good the past couple weeks. I just wonder. I worry more about who's going to cover Witten. That's my main concern. Bradley Fletcher's playing out of his mind. I really like that guy. He's turned into quite a good player.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think I'm trying to remember. I wish people would send us emails reminding us of what we actually picked wins and losses wise. But I'm trying to remember if either one of us picked them at the beginning of the season to win this game. And obviously it's a major difference picking before the season and picking – you know, week to week, but
I think I had him splitting. I think I had him winning this one and losing down in Dallas, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I know that I had them losing in New York, which obviously didn't occur. But even still, I think at this is definitely a game, and it's hard to say this for a 3-3 team, but this is definitely a game that they should win. Not just because they're the better football team, but they're a good enough football team. And that's the thing. Both of these teams, neither one of them is really good enough to say, oh, this team should just win this game because they're that much better than the other team. Like both of these teams are not good enough to say that, but then again, not bad enough to think that the other team is just going to beat the other team. But the Eagles, the situation that they're in, and I'm a big believer in like the emotional part of football. And if you get, you know, if Chip Kelly is motivating them the right way, and you know he shouldn't be the be all end all. These guys should be motivating themselves at home against Dallas. Who anyone who's played against Dallas as a Philadelphia Eagle gets the whole rivalry and gets the whole hatred, and that should be juicing you up. And everything should be juicing you up so much that you're a good enough team. And if Dallas is not a good enough team, that you should be able to just come in. You got to win. You have to win this game.
I don't know if the players share the same hatred for Dallas that the fans do. I remember talking to Brian Dawkins about this a while back. I think it's true not just with him, with the current players in his locker room. I think they see New York, the Giants, as their main rival. Because of the proximity, because, I mean, they feud too. You know, the whole thing with Shady and, well, OC's not there anymore, but his thing with OC Umanura. I think they see the Giants as the guys that they really hate. Not that they don't hate everyone in the division, because they're divisional rivals. But I think, I tried to do this, it was 2 years ago. I tried to poll, I went down and asked every player I could talk to who they hated the most in the NFC East, and they kind of played it off like they hated everyone. But the Giants did come out slightly on top in my informal poll that I took.
Well, yeah, that does make sense, and I would agree there. I mean, I don't think the level of hate across the board would be the same in the locker room as it would be across the fan base. But I think DeSean Jackson, I kind of get a sense from him that he hates Dallas, but I'm sure he hates New York too. And yeah, I mean, New York really, truly is the greatest rival on proximity and the fact that they are a rival. I mean,
and they actually win Super Bowls. Dallas hasn't done that in a long time.
Right. That's exactly that. I mean, Dallas has not been the Dallas that we grew up with really since
Aikman left.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're going to get into this. We got about a minute to break, and we're definitely going to get in, to the quote unquote 4th-and-1 game. But, that season, you know, without records and, you know, in front of me and whatnot, but that season was, at least to me, the last that I can really remember, like, the hated Dallas team being the one that was never losing almost. So it's been a while since Dallas has been, I don't want to say a legitimate franchise, but it's been a while since they've been any kind of dynasty or any kind of on any kind of championship caliber. And yeah, you did see maybe a little bit of a lull in the rivalry. I don't think it was lost in any stretch of imagination. But yeah, you did kind of see a little bit of a lull. But I think, to be honest with you, I really think that was because and I'm not saying this as a negative, but I think that since the Eagles had gotten so good for so long and that we were used to seeing them win just about every week, we as a fan base would go into Dallas games not feeling like we already lost going into it or feeling like we had or feeling like that was the season defining game. You know what I mean? When Dallas was winning all those titles, and you know, even when we spoke about last week, when the Eagles were in a division where they didn't win many playoff games and they didn't win any Super Bowls, but they were beating Super Bowl teams every year, and the Giants, Washington, and Dallas. You went into every game really as a fan, clinging to it and just so desperately wanting to win, whether it was week one, week nine, week whatever, because that was the defining game of the season, because you knew you knew the Cowboys were probably going to go and win a Super Bowl, or the Giants or the Redskins were, and you just wanted to get that win that day.
It's like a college rivalry, like a Michigan, Ohio State. I don't care if you guys are going to the national championship. We just want to beat you.
Yeah. You guys could win the national championship and go parading down the street and run over all my grandparents, but if we beat you in that
season,
we
win. We got bragging rights for the rest of the year.
I'll find other grandparents. Hey, we'll figure it out. All right, jabronis. Going to go to a break. We're going to come back with a lot more Dallas talk, Dallas Eagles talk, a lot more talk about this 4th-and-1 game. Because for those of you listening out there, we got kind of a unique perspective on where each of us were that day. Because as we all know, that's a game that everyone remembers where they were. Jabronis coming back. Listen up, you're missing, y'all. Swing it while I'm singing.
Hey! Give it what you're getting. Knowing what I know. Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Can't get enough of the Philly sports jabronis? Want to get together over tea and scones and share with us your life story? No thanks. We hate tea and scones. But we do have a website you can visit that offers all the jabroni action you can handle. Go to www.phillysportsjabronis. That's jabronis.com.
Yahoo!
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The Philly Sports Jabronis are everywhere. We're online. We're streaming through the internet airwaves.
Can you hear me?
We're probably hiding in your bushes.
Hey, get out of there.
Oh, and we have social miscreant. I mean, media pages. Find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Philly Sports Champs. And for God's sakes, trim your bushes. It's like Jumanji in here.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Who are your top five Philly outfielders of all time? What's your pick for the top five all-time Philadelphia sports jerseys? Who are the top five Philly athletes you'd never let babysit your kids? Let us know by visiting My Top 5 at PhillySportsJabronis.com. And let us know. Again, that's My Top 5. And the website is PhillySportsJabronis.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports. Voice America Sports.
Best friend that I ever had.
All right, Jabronis, we're back. And little Queen.
Oh, wait, I thought that was actually Michael Vick singing the Nick Foles. I was going to say, he's pretty good.
That's what it felt like the other day, right? It was like a little awkward there. I honestly thought that they were going to break out some pillows and start slamming them each other's faces like a slumber party. It was a love fest. I mean, they actually, literally, both of them used the word love. Nick said, "I love Mike," and Mike said, "I love Nick." I mean, is this a quarterback controversy, or are they getting married? Are they getting hitched?
I guess just like with the general population, quarterbacks just throw that word around, and we'll have to find out if they really truly mean it. I mean, if one of them's going to start making dinner for the other, or you know,
I want to see them. I want to watch them in their natural habitat, hanging out together. What could they possibly be doing? Going to the movies together? Were they?
You know what? We do. We got to go right from the show. We got to go track down their publicists and get this reality TV thing going. You're giving me some ideas here about, you know, Vic and Nick.
I like it. You know what? I'd probably watch it.
We could do like a Laverne and Shirley thing and have them, you know, hanging out in, you know, bottle factories and, you know, skipping down the street.
Walking their dogs together.
Hanging out with Lenny and Squeaky. Joe, we can pull Joe Banner back into the fray. I used to like to call him Squeaky anyway. We can bring
obviously I'm making fun, but it is kind of refreshing to see that these guys are, I don't know, embroiled. Is that fair to say? I don't know if that's fair to say in this quarterback controversy. Yet they legitimately, I don't think it's an act. I think they legitimately like each other.
I think so too. I mean, I'm going to go in with saying I think when it really means hope, but there's no reason to think that it's a show at this point. I think it's genuine. I mean, I think they were having a little bit of fun with the media, and hey, that's cool. Like,
oh yeah,
you want to have fun. You want to be a team that has fun. You know, it's one of the things that I miss about the Buddy Ryan days. And yeah, they weren't winning Super Bowls. You know, go and play that broken record over and over again. But it was just a fun team, and it's not just because we were kids and everything was fun. I mean, that was a fun team. And you hear the way adults talked about, you know, people who are obviously older adults now, but the way they talked about that era, and, you know, they would have been in their, you know, early 30s and late 30s and stuff at that point. I mean, it was just a fun team. And, you know, like the kind of like the 93 Phillies were, you know, in their case, they were kind of, you know, fun from a lunatic standpoint, but still fun nonetheless. And yeah, I think they were having fun with the media, and it's good to see, and it's good to think at this point that they're it's mostly genuine with a little bit of fun.
This is what Mike Vick does, though. This is why I like Mike Vick, obviously, maybe a little man crush, but this is why he's such a good leader, and what I like what he brings to the locker room. He does this. This is not the first time he's done this. He should work for a bomb squad. I mean, he diffuses. He diffuses, or like a terrorist negotiator, he diffuses like volatile situations with ease. Like the Riley Cooper thing, he just took that situation, calmed everyone down, threw it under the table, and they went on with everything. He's doing the same thing with this. I mean, he orchestrated that whole thing the other day.
But let me ask you this, and you know me, I'm not a big hater, so I don't ask, I'm not trying to look for a reason to find him wrong and anything like that. Not his biggest fan, but I'm certainly not a hater. But let me ask you this. Do you think that part of this is because, whether he was told it or whether he just really, really believes it, that once he feels 100%, once he goes to Chip Kelly and says, yay, 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 boss, I am at 100%, I'm ready. Do you really think that in his head he genuinely thinks no matter what Nick Foles does, he could go 0-8 or he could go 8-0, could go whatever. Do you think Vic really thinks in his head, once he's 100% healthy, he's got the job again, and that's just letting him be more comfortable and not sulk? Like, do you think he thinks that? And if he does think that, do you think he's in for a rude awakening, or what's your take?
I do think he thinks that, and I don't know, because Chip doesn't wear his emotions. He doesn't let you in on what he's thinking, so I really don't know. But I do think Chip Kelly has a little man crush himself on Vic. And I think it's going to be hard. He's in a tough situation. Because if Foles comes out and wins this football game and looks good doing so, he really has no choice. You can't go back to Vic at that point. And I think he wants to. I think he's enthralled with his athleticism and what he brings to the table. Which, look, Foles is doing good things, and he's running that offense very efficiently. And he had even had that four-yard touchdown run. But he still doesn't bring the same skill set that a Mike Vick does to the table. So I don't know what Chip Kelly's going to do. But I do think, let me just tell you this, too. I don't know if anyone wrote this down. I meant to throw it in my story for Metro Philadelphia the other day. At the end of that press conference, and I don't want to read too much into it, but when they were walking out and someone asked a question, I think it was an ABC reporter, and they were saying, we're going to do this every week now? And Vic was like, yeah, we're going to do this. Yeah, we're going to do this every week. I'm going to be on the other side next week, though.
Oh, man. That's what, yeah, I mean, I do think he thinks that as well. And I think it's okay for him to think that he's got the job when he's 100% healthy. I mean, I think in his mind, that's what you want to think.
What I wonder is if anything has been promised to him that no one knows about. You saw that quote from Shady McCoy the other day, too. Did you see that quote?
After Sean Marino stinks? I think he's
No, that's hilarious, by the way. I meant to ask him the other day about that. I was like, should I trade for No Sean Marino on my fantasy team? Because he had three touchdowns last week.
How many touchdowns did you have, Shady?
But no, he said after the game, after the Tampa game, that Chip Kelly told everyone that Mike Vick was the starter and he was coming back in. And like matter-of-factly said that on the record to reporters.
Right.
And when reporters brought it up to Chip Kelly at his day after press conference, he was like, I don't know what LeSean was talking about. We never had a conversation about that.
Yeah, I did hear
so,
that.
So, but my thing is, did that conversation happen? And Chip's just trying to ignore it and say it didn't happen? Or is LeSean just assuming stuff on his own?
Yeah, I bet it happened. I mean, it probably wasn't a closed-door meeting where, you know, they sat around a burning football helmet to make a fire and have, you know, kumbaya and talk about this. I don't think it was anything like that. But yeah, I'm sure it was said. I mean, because if you're Chip Kelly, you have to tell Vic in so many words, at least. You have to make him think to a point that he's not going to lose his job. I mean, you got to let, you know, the play of the backup quarterback determine that. So you want your starter to not get downtrodden, not get lost in the locker room. And, you know, the kind of one of the unwritten rules of football is that you're not supposed to lose a job as a starter due to injury. Now we know that that's not
that the happens
case.
All the time,
right? Yeah, it happens. I mean, it happened in San Francisco to the tune of a team almost winning the Super Bowl. So it certainly happens. So if you know, and it's and that's why you know I'm still calling this the quasi controversy because it really hasn't hit that level yet where there's two healthy quarterbacks, right? Or who are both healthy. And who both feel in their minds that they're the best option for the team to win, you know. And then so now, for me, for Vic, I'm really kind of anxious to see how he handles this moving forward because it's not going to change my opinion of him on one way or the other. I'm always going to kind of be neutral as far as Vic goes, but I'm really interested to see if Foles does continue to win games, and he becomes healthy, Vic, if he's still going to be the same jovial, you know, let's hang out and eat sandwiches and, you know, have fun at press conferences kind of guy. And if he does stay that way, God bless him, because one of the things that you and I talked about a couple weeks ago, I think when we were talking about the whole Vic versus McNabb personality thing, where one of the things that I think as for Vic, and this is not, I'm not throwing darts at him here, but him going to jail and really kind of seeing his football career flash before his eyes. You know, he went to jail and he got, you know, whatever reformed, got the whole behavioral protocol that I'm sure he went through. And now he's acting on better terms than he might be a nicer guy now than had he not gone to jail. And I'm not going to hold that against him necessarily, because hey, if you're a good person, you're a good person. If you're being a good person, you're being a good person. If you're being a good teammate, you're being a good teammate. But I do think that this is kind of like Mike Vick Part 2, where, granted, you know, got to give him credit for doing what he's doing, but I wonder if he would have turned out to be that way if he didn't have to get reformed through jail. So, you know, not going to hold that against him, but it's just something I like to, you know, bring to light, kind of, because that's kind of how I evaluate him from a personality standpoint. And I think he did learn a lot of things, and whatever, I'm not going to stay on that topic too long, but yeah, just I think that he is more of a mild-mannered person, and just more someone who's more can bring people together. Like he seems to have
everyone on that team loves Mike Vick.
Yeah,
they all come up to him, like to hang out with him, talk to him. I mean, he owns that locker room. They love him. They like idolize him. I mean, half these kids were probably using him on Madden back in the day.
They were using him on Madden. They were, you know. They were throwing it. They were throwing the football around wearing his jersey. I mean, yeah, he's a lot of guys in that locker room's idol, and that's the truth. But in the fact that he's able to,
I was flipping through the so they put out like a media book every week, and it has biographies of every single player on the team, and I was bored, so I was reading. I'd like read everyone's thing, and they ask him like random questions, like where do you like to eat, where's your favorite place to hang out in Philly, who are your favorite athletes growing up. I didn't write down the exact number, but I think like half of them had Mike Vick listed.
Really? Yeah, I believe it. I would certainly believe it. Yeah. And I do think he's the until he proves otherwise, I still think he's the guy who controls the locker room. And getting back to what you brought up about Shady, I don't know. I really like Shady. Certainly as a player, I mean, he's right now in the NFL. He's probably in most games the best player on the football field. He's certainly going to be on Sunday, in my opinion. But
Barry Sanders, part two.
Well, see, I think Barry Sanders is the best running back who ever lived.
I agree. I agree 100%. If he wouldn't have stopped playing, and he played for some bad Detroit teams.
That's the thing. Bad Detroit
and they could,
teams.
It's kind of like Adrian Peterson in a way. They would just stack the box, but you couldn't stop him. He was too good. Yeah.
And it's like,
Emmitt Smith had like all pros on his offensive line his entire career.
Yeah, Emmitt Smith. I think that's why his line was so bad in Detroit. It was, people were just actually, Dallas, their offensive line's not good enough. Let's give them freaking 11 guys, 12, 13, 14, 15. But yeah, that's the thing. As bad as the some of those Detroit teams were, and he played on a couple good ones. And you know, it's funny how kind of the circle goes round and round when we get back to 4th-and-1, and we just, you know, talk about that season. And how that season really became defined, at least for several weeks, by that game. Barry Sanders definitely played on some really potent Detroit teams, but for the most part, not good clubs and offensive lines that were just pitiful. And I think it was ESPN back when they actually did what you could call journalistic work. Back in the day, they had like a breakdown, a study, and I'm not going to remember the specifics, but they did a thing between Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith, and they broke down like where each running back's first kind of juke move or whatever they would have called it at that time, or maybe, you know, the whoop, where their first,
the Madden move when he circles it.
Yeah. When they first had to hit the B button, they showed like Barry Sanders was like on average 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage or something like that, and Emmitt's was like 2 yards after the line of scrimmage. And that's not dead on rights gospel what I just said there, but it was a big discrepancy in where like the first move that the running back had to make was, and how another notch in Barry Sanders' belt for how incredible he was. Yeah, but I was so mad at him. Man, you'd think he was an Eagle at this point, as much as we're talking about him. But I remember being so mad at him when he quit.
Oh yeah,
I was so mad. I shouldn't say mad at him. Like I kind of understood a little bit while he did it. So, but man, I was mad as a fan and just someone who like did not want to see him.
And as someone who hated the Cowboys growing up, because now you're like, oh, now Emmitt's going to get this record.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I was maybe I was afraid he was going to go and join Dallas. Well, we're coming up on another break here, and we're not going anywhere. We're not joining Dallas. I don't think any one of us is ready to be a romosexual yet, right?
No, but I wrote a story about him the other day. I'm coming to appreciate him a little bit. He's a pretty good quarterback. I just don't want him when it counts. But
let's
I'll take it for three quarters.
Yeah, three and a half. Then you're starting to get into the sketchy realm there.
Treacherous territory.
Yeah. Well, I would. I guess if I was a coach, I would take him for one quarter, because I know that the other team's game plan when you go against Romo is to really rattle him. So if I was his coach, I would want to put him in for that horror movie first quarter and then be like, beat it, Chief. I got all I needed out of you. I wanted to see you get harassed. But no, I don't necessarily hate Romo. And we should, should get into a little bit of a conversation with him when we come back too, because it'll be interesting to see what our general impressions are of him. And we'll be back.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Can't get enough of the Philly sports jabronis? Want to get together over tea and scones and share with us your life story?
No thanks.
We hate tea and scones. But we do have a website you can visit that offers all the jabroni action you can handle. Go to www.phillysportsjabronis. That's JABRONIS.com.
Yahoo!
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
The Philly Sports Jabronis are everywhere. We're online. We're streaming through the internet airwaves.
Can you hear me?
We're probably hiding in your bushes.
Hey, get out of there.
Oh, and we have social miscreant. I mean, media pages. Find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Philly Sports Jabs.
And for God's sakes,
trim your bushes. It's like Jumanji in here. Who are your top five Philly outfielders of all time? What's your pick for the top five all-time Philadelphia sports jerseys? Who are the top five Philly athletes you'd never let babysit your kids? Let us know by visiting My Top 5 at PhillySportsJabronis.com. And let us know. Again, that's My Top 5. And the website is PhillySportsJabronis.com.
The opening kickoff is a beauty.
It's a fly ball deep right field. Back goes O'Neal. He's at the
shot.
Got it. With 2.8 seconds left
to left. I don't care where they put him.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything. Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
Philly sports jabronis, and out of hell with it, I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there. Look at Mr. Smith, and they stole him again!
Wow, I felt like Merle Reese was right here, live in the studio with me.
Yeah, Merle Reese is right here dying. What are your last words, Merle? You sound like a jabroni.
that's the jabroni version of Merle Reese.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Well, certainly wanted to kind of get that out of my system, because just talking about some of the old Eagles, Cowboys memories, and shameless plugs we like to do around here on the Jabroni internet airwaves. I'm working on a column that basically I have to have it by tomorrow if it comes to
irrelevant. Working on a column for some of my five favorite Eagles moments since the after the NFC Championship game of '80, because I wasn't old enough to remember that, so I'm trying to stay true and go with the ones that I can actually remember, and that's, spoiler alert, going to be the my number one moment, and 1995 Eagles, because there was a lot of drama going around Randall Cunningham and how Ray Rhodes didn't wasn't really in favor of Cunningham, and kind of as soon as he came in, he was looking to turn the page from Randall Cunningham with his new regime. But that 95 Eagles team, man, was so much fun and just one of my favorite Philly teams of all time. And that play, which really two plays
times in a row. And
we're having a little bit of interference here on the edge, Brony Internet Airwaves, so we're going to take a quick break and come right back. Stay on the edge of the seat. I know that's where you're at. Jabronis are back, and you know what happened there. I'm pretty sure Romo or one of those other bastard Cowboys is messing with our hookup. They heard us kind of bad-mouthing the organization a little bit, and they went. And
I thought you were going to say Merle Reese was messing with our connection. Stop doing these bad impressions of me.
I guess if you're getting if someone's making impressions of you, good or bad, I guess you got to be happy about it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Hey, Jabronis. So basically, we promised these good people who were listening to us that we would tell them about our 4th-and-1 story, and I kind of got into how that was one of my favorite plays. Even considering the circumstances that you know Randall was being kind of shifted away that team. Remember when they were saying, "Oh, we're going to make Randall Cunningham a wide receiver." Every now and then, like that would have been. At that point, I would have been like, "Damn, that would have been cool." But they, you know.
And then, well, how about this? Remember, they bringing him in on third downs.
Yeah,
they could do that with Vic.
Yeah,
someone wrote that story. Actually,
I was just like, man, I just wanted to see him on the freaking field. I wasn't ready for him to leave Philadelphia yet. But anyway, my first legitimate job. My first job that would have lasted more than 3 weeks. I was working at a supermarket at the time, and not every Sunday, and then necessarily not every Eagles game, because depending on, it was probably like rotating Sundays, and then Eagles could have been 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock, and my schedule could rotate. But yeah, there was a good enough number of Eagle games that year that I had to consume while working, and believe it or not, I pulled it off. By working at a supermarket, even though I worked at a supermarket, and what I would do is I would basically wear my headphones, and I had, I guess, the quote-unquote luxury of freezing half to death outside, helping people, you know, carry their oranges and kumquats and, you know, pineapples and, you know, blood-dripping red meat out to the car. So I was kind of been able to go in incognito a little bit, and I would wear my headphones, under whatever a knit hat or whatever I could put on my head. You know, usually my hair was train wreck, as we all know, or even a shopping bag hat. And I was out in the parking lot listening to that game, and 4th-and-1 happened, and 4th-and-1 happened then again, and I went screaming into the supermarket like a wild animal, and basically got to hear that entire game, and that was just a real emotional. Racking game, and that game, obviously later in the season, but it really did define that season and really went a long way to getting them into the playoffs and, winning against Barry Sanders' Detroit Lions team, one of his good ones. And it's just a great memory for me in a lot of ways. And it was, when you were telling me just a few minutes ago that you actually had to work that day too, it's kind of interesting that two wild, rabid Philadelphia sports fans would actually be working that day, but
gotta make that bread.
What were you doing? You were hooking it. Is that what you said? You were working it out on the street.
No, I was working at Bluebell Country Club. Actually, I was a busboy. Worked there for a long time. Grade school, some college too, and I worked pretty much every Sunday. unfortunately, because brunch was busy. Like offers would come in, and they need people. So, yeah, it sucked for me. But, you know, some people would have headphones. The cooks always had the game on the radio in the back, so I would sneak back as often as possible and catch updates. And actually, sometimes it was updates to the guys that were out for brunch with their wives, let them know what was going on. But yeah, that game they had on at the bar. Little, there was no LCD big screens back then. It's a regular standard size TV.
Rabbit ears?
No rabbit ears. But yeah, I was doing. It was like because it was later. It was a later game, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Eagles went into that game with I think 8 wins. I think that was their 9th win.
I mean, time wise, it was later in the after. Was it a one? Was it a 4?
Yeah, I believe it was a 4 o'clock game.
Because I remember it was like in between, we were kind of changing over, getting ready for dinner, so we weren't very busy. So I had time to like chill out. There was a couple people at the bar watching it, and I could chill out and watch it from time to time. And that 4th and 1 happened, and I saw it, and I was like, wow, all right, I'm staying here. I'm not going back into the kitchen. I'm watching what's going on here. And I watched it. It happens again. Yeah, everyone just, the few people that were at the bar were flipping out. I was flipping out. Everyone's high-fiving each other. It was just amazing because, yeah. Well, Merle's call was unbelievable. I didn't hear that live, but...
And that's, you know what? That must have been like... I guess it was in my subconscious. It probably shouldn't have been, but that might be one of the reasons why I, like, love that moment so much, was I was actually... I was a radio listener that day. I didn't see it on TV. I got that play, like, boom, like, right there, happening right then. That's probably, you know, a really good reason as to why that's kind of just stuck with me for so long. Because I didn't have to hear it the day after or the, you know, the weekend.
Well, interesting side note to that is Moe Reese was a member at Bluebell Country Club, and he would come in every Sunday night. Every Sunday night he would come in. Was that – that was a home game, right?
It was a home game.
Did. So, that yeah, he would come in, and the kitchen hated him. Now, listen, not because he was a bad dude. He's one of the nicest people you ever meet. He was very courteous, tipped well, all that stuff. Good person. But he would always come in right – when people were – like they would stop serving dinner at like 9 o'clock. When he'd be getting done the game, he would come in at like 8:45, like 8:50, clockwork, every Sunday night, and people just hated him. They're like, no. It's like, we're just making him sandwiches. He's getting no dinners. And he wouldn't care. He's like – he would order sandwiches. Well, they were good sandwiches. They were like gourmet turkey clubs and stuff. Not like serving them like a Wawa shorty or something. But yeah, and he came in that night too, and it was like I didn't hear the call. So I would have maybe probably said something. I think I bust his table that night.
Now wait, I want to make sure I ask you this. So these people said Merle Reese is, we're not cooking him dinner. He's just getting sandwiches. These had to be younger people though, right? No, because they had. I'm envisioning like these young kids who could just give a F. You know, they love Merle Reese, but damn it, they want to go out and whatever, drink and whatever, do something, you know, illegal, and they don't care who he is at the time when they want to get off shift. You could be the Pope and whatever. Like, we want to get off shift. We're gonna be jerks, you know. You're getting the leftover chicken bones from the people that couldn't finish their wings and stuff.
Now that I'm reminiscing on my employment there, I think maybe at a certain hour they did switch at a certain, like maybe 8 o'clock or something, switched over from a full out dinner menu to like a sandwich type. It was like lighter fare, I think, because that would be messed up. They're like, no,
I can see it.
I want a filet mignon. No. You're getting a turkey
get the filet,
sandwich.
You'll get the,
you're going to like it.
You'll get the filet mignon cheese. But no, but it's and what, you know, it's kind of like on the reverse angle of it. When I was working on Sundays at the supermarket, and I'm not talking about Merle Reese coming in. I'm talking about, you know, average Joe and Jane. I would get mad when people came in to do their food shopping during an actual football game. Hey, you know, if you want to get your food shopping in before 1 o'clock, I'll food shop with you. I'll help you. You know what I mean? I'll make a good gesture, because that's a good gesture to those of us who have to work for a living during football games. But those people who would come in like right after the game started, because, you know, and you know, there was people out there who would want to, you know, take advantage of the football being on. So then they would do their food shopping so that they could come in and get out.
Good move.
It's that's backhand bitch slap, you know, with a box of cereal. That's what that is. And I would, you know, I would hate it having to help people during games, and especially during, like, crucial games. I can remember, and, you know, a couple weeks later that same season, the when the Eagles would ultimately lose to Dallas in the second round of the playoffs after beating the Lions, I was working again that day, and I think that was a 1 o'clock game, and it was like a blizzard out. It was like a blizzard out, and working at the working outside, working at the supermarket, and they were, you know, it was one of those games where they kind of just, they were never in it from the beginning, except for I think they went up 3-0. If memory serves me right, they either went up 3-0 or tied the game at 3-3 relatively early. Rodney Pete would end up getting hurt that game. Cunningham, I believe, would come in, and that would kind of be his last play as an Eagle. But
moment of silence.
Yeah. But yeah, he would obviously, we all know he would go and tear it up with Minnesota there for a little while. But so it was kind of just desserts for me, but not really. During this game, people were still actually at the supermarket during a blizzard because everyone needed their eggs. You know, everyone needed their eggs and their bread and whatever their emergency water bottle.
We used to stock up on beer.
If the roof's coming down on you, what do you want to do? You want to be sucking on a 40 or frying an egg? You know what I mean? Like, what do you want to do?
I know what I'm doing.
But so that day, there were people actually working, people actually shopping, even during this blizzard, and the Eagles get this field goal, and I literally ran into the parking lot up this big snow mountain, screaming my head off. Someone actually asked me, did they win? Did they win? I was like, they tied it at 3. Went diving down this big-ass pile of snow and came back covered, like, I looked like a snowman trying to help people with their bags. And they were like, get the hell away from me. You get snow over my watermelon. Oh, man. But that's great. So, all right. So you kind of were walking by. Saw that it was 4th and 1, so it was like, oh, I got to watch this 4th and 1 play. Yeah. Obviously saw that the score was tied. And, wow, man, that's...
Everyone knew that I love football on the Eagles, yeah. So it was no one cared.
So I was going to say, did the bosses say anything to you?
No, like I said, it was in between service periods, so it was a lull. So no one cared.
All right, so you didn't have, you know, a whipcracker there or someone...
Yeah, had it been, like, prime time lunch hours, I don't know what would have happened. Maybe I would have never seen it.
Well, these are the kind of things that you know, that really make Eagles and Dallas matchup special, because, you know, there's I'm sure there's so many stories that people have, not quite like this, you know what I mean? Not quite the same or exactly the same, but similar in that, you know, everyone has to work for the most part, even in this, you know, it seems like a lot of people are working even though the economy is.
I was spoiled though when I was growing up because my dad had season tickets, so. If I wasn't working, I was at the game.
But still, you could say you're spoiled, but at the same time, you still went out and worked. So,
yeah, I mean, spoiled because I could go to, I went to a lot of games growing up.
Yeah, you got your.
I was at the snowball game. I was at that one. Oh,
man.
But we had good seats, so we didn't have any snow in our section. All the people up top, they had all the snow. I was looking up and looking at my dad. I was like, well, we got no snow down here.
You're talking about when they pelted JJ?
Yeah, they pelted everyone. I remember because our seats were in the end zone behind the goalpost. So I remember when they would go to punt, and people were just trying to pelt the punter in the ass.
Oh, my God. That is crazy. I wish I could have been at that. I was at a Phillies game once, a Phillies home opener where it was 92. 91 or 92, the year that they came out with the new jerseys. Or was it 93? Maybe it was 93. Anyway, right around there. And it was the home opener, and the promo was they gave out like this retrospective poster of the Phillies jerseys through the years, and like each time they had a new jersey. And it was like a long ass poster. And back then the Phillies were garbage. Obviously it was 93. They were about to have a glorious year. But they gave out these big posters, and we were making paper airplanes out of them. I had a friend with me who, like, I don't know how, but he was making like the most perfect paper airplanes a human being has ever made at any time in anyone else's life ever. And we were just throwing them down. We were up the top of the bowl, and we were just firing them down at people.
I was terrible at making paper airplanes. It's one of my my biggest regrets. I could never make a good one. That would be so much fun to throw a paper airplane in someone's eye.
Oh, what? And again, on the same night, we're you know, not Eagles related, but I tried to throw a hot dog wrapper one time at Barry Bonds. And he was playing in left field. It was the series.
You should have thrown
the
whole hot dog at him.
Well, no, I ate that. Come on, I'm not gonna not eat my dollar dog.
They didn't have dollar dog nights back then.
That was
then.
Probably my lunch and dinner. I was still in high school.
They didn't have dollar dogs back then. You probably paid $5 for that hot dog.
Well, all right. Well, I probably got in for a $3 ticket though. When you get those Philly Franks and you get the little Fanatic ticket. But we were in left field, obviously, and we were actually near a couple Giants fans and my buddy Bob and I. And you know, it was a series where I guess Bonds charged the mound, right? He charged Vitalico or something like that. He charged the mound, and we were yelling at him, telling him that he was going to get, you know, going to get jumped and whatever kind of things. And, you know, the stadium's like just about empty. He can totally hear us. He turned around, acknowledged us, like made the gun sign with his arm and pointed to his guns.
What a douche!
yelling at him, and meanwhile, there's people in the stands, like mom, dad, and like a 9-year-old kid, all gianted up. Calling us hooligans, I fire the foil wrapper. Like, I'm... And I fire it, and it goes, like... It doesn't even make it to the field. It, like, goes into, like, the gutter where the ball girls would sit. And the dad turns around and goes, oh, yeah, what did that prove, buddy? And I'm like, you know what that proved? That I can't reach him from here. So that's that proved. But,
Why you didn't get, like an offer... Like from a Philly scout or something to come down and pitch.
I left too soon. They were probably following me out the stadium, and I was just too. I was really fast back then. I probably just walked right by that.
No, I mean maybe a scout would have signed you up. Maybe
that's what I'm saying. Like yeah, you probably saw that. You know that foil wrapper. You know, knifing through the veteran stadium wins, and I missed my opportunity. But you know, it wouldn't be a proper jabroni show without finding a way to ridicule Barry Bonds. And with that, I want to just go prediction real quick, and that's how we're going to go.
Whew, wow, I didn't get a score ready, but I'm going to take the Cowboys. I don't want to do it.
Oh,
yeah, you can boo me. I'm going to take the Cowboys, but that's good, Eagles fans. That's good because I've been pretty bad with these predictions, so that could work in the Eagles' favor. But I'm going to take the Cowboys in a close, high scoring affair.
All right, how about them Eagles?
Hey, thanks for tuning in today for Philly Sports Jabronis. It's the weekend, and that's all we've got time for, so we can go out and have some fun. Check us out next week, Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Sports Channel. See ya.